And now, from the Daniel Scappin Studio, deep in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains, it's Mike Malloy.
We're back. Welcome to, what is today, Wednesday the 5th of September? We're still in September. Yes, we are. 5th of September 2018. This is the second day of hearings with the Senate Judiciary Committee. And Brett Kavanaugh, who is Trump's second, if you can believe it, nominee for the Supreme Court. There's no question that Kavanaugh is going to be confirmed, and he knows it. That's why if you watch any of the hearings, you see the constant smirking and the constant evading of questions that are put to him in detail and roughly in detail, in a rough manner, by the Democrats. Well, the Republicans just continue to stroke him and pet him and tell him what a good man he is. I'll tell you what, the I read something today in the New York Times editorial, or an op-ed, I should say, about the uselessness now of the Supreme Court. It ought to be just fucking abolished. It has become nothing more than a political sewer where everything that the Congress doesn't want to legislate winds up in front of these nine justices, which is not exactly the way the framers had it all in mind. But anyway, in today's testimony, I don't know if you saw it or not. If you did, you may want to go do something else because I am going to talk about this for a while. Also going to talk about Colin Kaepernick, too, and Nike's decision to feature him in this latest ad campaign of theirs. I'll get to that in a little bit. Anyway, Patrick Leahy, the Democrat of Vermont, brought up two scandals from George W. Bush's stupid presidency. And let me just add parenthetically, I thought nobody could be stupider than Bush when it came to being president of the United States. You know, dumber, ignorant, more ignorant. And then along comes Trump. But I digress. Leahy brought up a couple of these Bush-era scandals with Kavanaugh. And he suggested that the emails, the Bush White House emails that get into Kavanaugh's method of operating and the shit that he did while he worked for Bush, all of that stuff is in the emails in the hands of the Judiciary Committee's Republican managers, and they will not release them. They will not release them. And one of the reasons they won't release them, in my humble opinion, is because the Republicans on the Judiciary Committee have read those, and they realize that those emails contain contradictory testimony. Testimony that contradicts what this smarmy son of a bitch who is going to be the next Supreme Court justice made more than a decade ago. That's one of the reasons that Chuck Grassley and the rest of these Republican swine on this committee will not release these. These people have really pushed it beyond the point which we're never going to go back. First of all, Mitch McConnell, in not allowing a Senate hearing on Obama's nomination to be on the Supreme Court, holding that seat open for a year. And then these filthy bastards, these Republicans, all of them together, every single one of them. And you don't tell me about Ben Sasse that he's the voice of New Republicans. Horse shit. He's another typical worm just like the rest of them. Oh, he sounds good. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Sounds good. Looks good. Oh, absolutely. But he's a Republican. And that means he's a lying son of a bitch, no matter what he says. So where was I? Oh, yeah. The reason the Senate won't release these emails is because they know what's in them. They know that there is testimony in those emails that make Kaepernick look like, I'm sorry, make Brett Kavanaugh look like the liar and the duplicitous liar that he really is. So they're just not going to do it. They don't hold a hearing for Obama's nominee for the Supreme Court for a year. And I mean, you tell me if our system's not fucked up when one ugly son of a bitch, Mitch McConnell, one turtle-looking ugly son of a bitch can hold up the entire Supreme Court confirmation process until such time as the election for the next president can be rigged by Mitch McConnell and Mitch McConnell and Donald Trump's allies in the Kremlin to make sure that Donald Trump, this useless bastard, gets elected. I mean, don't think that all this just happens gratuitously. Don't think that none of this is not carefully thought out. These fuckers knew what was going on. I just wish that Mueller's investigation would go beyond Trump, where it concerns money from these dictators in the Kremlin, and release the names of the American senators, past, present, and future, who have received money from the Russians. You have to understand something, and this has finally sunk into my thick head. The Russians, for whatever the reasons, some of the reasons are justifiable, the Russians want to see this country fucking fold and collapse. They want to see just about every Western democracy fold and collapse. And they're trying to do it on the cheap, so to speak, you know, with no bombed out buildings or 50 million dead or people gasping to breathe from gas attacks, which the Russians support in Syria. They're trying to do it on the cheap. But their objective is exactly the same: the destruction of Western democracies once and fucking for all. Forever. That's it. The end of it. And as far as contributions to these right-wing Nazi senators who all of a sudden have popped up out of the slime, well, of course it comes from the Kremlin. What? Are we supposed to believe it doesn't? And the National Rifle Association, which is a wholly owned subsidiary now of Vladimir Putin and the Russians, oh, you don't believe that? Then you're a fucking moron if you don't believe it. You really, really are. If the NRA was able to spend $100 million, that's what we know about, $100 million to get this orange orangutan elected in 2016, do you suppose that the NRA got all that money from their little $30 and $40 contributions from these brain-dead fucking yahoos who like to wander around in camo with their guns and talk about, we're going to take back the country from the niggers. That's what we're going to do. The niggers and the Jews, we're going to take it back. Do you think for one moment that the NRA has devolved into anything other than a fascistic organization that gets its financing and therefore its directives from Putin-related Russian mafia? Come on, you're old enough, you're experienced enough to understand this shit now. Let's get our heads out of our collective asses about America, the free and the brave and the hopeful and home of this and home of that. Let's just cut the shit. This is a struggle for survival. You're either in or you're out. If you're out, fuck you. That's my opinion. If you are out, if you are not willing to really struggle against this tide of fascism, then what the fuck are you doing here? What are you doing? What? I had this experience this morning, and that's what kind of pounded this into my head. I go to the pool to do my workout, and I'm swimming laps back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And I've told you before, it's probably the closest I come to a meditative state is when I swim. I'm not even halfway there, but it's the closest I come. So everything's going along fine. And in the lanes next to me are three middle-aged women who show up pretty much every day to I guess they tell their friends, yeah, I'm going to go swim some laps. Oh, horseshit. What they do, they put all these floats on their bodies and they walk up and down the lanes. And I don't know what they're doing. They're not getting any exercise. I've never seen any of them breathing heavily, like, you know, the cardiovascular workout, nothing. But that's not the story. Here's the story. So about every fourth or fifth lap, I stop to try to breathe again, you know, catch my breath. So in stopping today, I'm listening. I hear this chatter every day, just about every day. They're there when I'm there. And there are no men there at the time I'm there. I guess all the men are off working. I have no fucking idea. But I started listening to what they're saying this morning. And they're chittering and chattering on about the most inane bullshit I've ever heard. One of them said to the other two, well, do you like art that's about flowers or animals? I guess what they're talking about is this kind of art that you buy at Walmart, you know, that shit that you put up on the wall to cover up a blank space. I don't know. Do you like animals or flowers? That was just the opening salvo. And you know, I thought to myself, this is fucking insane. Here are three middle-aged women who are probably going to have at least another 25, 30 years of living in this country. And they're talking about this shit rather than discussing these issues. Now, you might say, oh, Malloy, give it a fucking break. Just because you talk about this shit 2 hours a day doesn't mean somebody else has to talk about it. Well, the truth is, yeah, I only talk about it 2 hours a day, but it's on my mind 24/7, unless I'm swimming or if I'm writing. If I'm working on the book, I can get this shit out of my mind. If I'm doing laps, I can get it out of my mind until I hear these three women chittering on like three goddamn chipmunks talking about, well, you like art that's flowers or animals? Jesus fucking Christ. I had just this impulse. I didn't follow up on it, but I had an impulse to drown all three of them. You know, just hold their heads underwater until they stop struggling. Woo, shit. Where was I? Oh, yeah. The hearing today. It is a struggle. It's not just a struggle for the soul of the country. It's not just a struggle for the continuation of, well, I can't say that either, can I? The continuation of constitutional law. Because ask a bunch of black folk, ask a bunch of immigrants, ask a bunch of women, ask a bunch of minorities if they have had constitutional protections their entire lives. And if they understand your question, they'll break out in laughter. Especially black folk. They'll look at you like, what the fuck are you talking about, constitutional protection? Look at my skin. What color is my skin, motherfucker? Look at my hair. My hair look like yours? Well, okay, almost. But does it really look like yours? I am an African American. You think your constitutional bullshit applies to me? Get fucking real, Malloy. Okay. Okay. I get it. I've gotten it for a long time. But to watch this so-called confirmation hearing for this Brett Kavanaugh is I don't know. If I had a gag reflex, which apparently I don't, it would have been triggered about every 5 minutes by this smarmy-looking bastard. He sits there and stares at his questioners as though he's so concerned about hearing the question and answering truthfully. If he wanted to answer truthfully, if this son of a bitch had 1%, and don't give me this shit about, oh, I've got two daughters, oh, I've got a beautiful wife, oh, I got this, I got that. Fuck you. No, you don't. Everything you have, Mr. Kavanaugh, is a sham. Like the father of the dead high schooler from Parkland, Florida, who tried to shake your bloody fucking hand the other day, Mr. Kavanaugh, and not only did you not smile or acknowledge him or shake his hand, you turned your back and walked away, you piece of shit. But you will be confirmed as a Supreme Court justice. There is no question about that. And for you liberals or Democrats who are pinning your hopes on Murkowski or, what's her name from Maine? Susan Collins. Pin your hopes on Bozo the Clown. Murkowski and Collins, they're going to do what the fucking party tells them to do. They're going to be, are you shitting me? So everybody on that committee knows it. That's why the Democrats are losing their shit. They really are. And it's about time. I'm glad they're losing their shit. I'm glad that they're challenging this corpse, this animated corpse, Chuck Grassley. How the fuck long has he been sitting there? 100 years? Was he at the confirmation of Supreme Court justices nominated by Theodore Roosevelt? He sure as shit looks like it, doesn't he? Well, I'll tell you what we're going to do. No, you're out of order. You're out of order. And you have a young, energetic senator who, like Kamala Harris, who wants to point out, no, we're not out of order at all. You're out of order, you greasy old white son of a bitch, you. Why don't you go back to Iowa and rummage around in a corn silo until the shit collapses on you? Do the world a favor. Jesus Christ. And the way he talks. I don't know where that accent comes from, Grassley. But he uses an AI sound when it should be an E. I'm trying to remember. I'll hear it again when I look at some of the reruns tonight. But Jesus Christ, this man drives me crazy. But see how I get hung up on the minutia, right? Only to me it's not minutia. The way they talk, the way they look. These Republicans, these devils, these, they are so willing to sit there and let the country be run into a fucking hole because they know they're going to get what they want unless Trump and this Christian Nazi Pence are removed. And what they're going to get is a Christian fascist state, one party, one rule, one ring rules us all. That's the fucking way these people want it. Who's left to fight? Are you going to fight? You going to resist? Patrick Leahy, Democrat of Vermont. I wish I could understand half of what he says. It's like he's got a throat full of Vermont syrup or something. Monsieur, you know, fuck what, monsieur. One of the scandals that Leahy brought up was a disclosure in late 2003 and 2004. That a staff member of the Republican Judiciary Committee had infiltrated the Democrats' confidential internal files about which of George W. Bush's judicial nominees to try to block and with what tactics. Now, you might say, oh, big fucking deal, Malloy, it's politics. Politics ain't beanbag. No, this is not politics. This is theory. This is lying, cheating, sneaking, stealing. The other scandal was the disclosure, and this was a mind fuck to me, was that after the September 11th, 2001 terrorist attacks, the Bush administration had secretly ordered the NSA, National Security Agency, this is after the attacks, to intercept Americans' phone calls and emails without obtaining the judicial warrants required by the FISA Act. And these fucking Republicans now are screaming that the use of the FISA Act to get a wiretap on one of two, three, four, five of Trump's Kremlin operatives was somehow not done properly? Ah, but fuck it, that was 15 years ago, right? Who cares? Who cares? That the Bush administration ordered illegal wiretaps and email intercepts on everybody in the country. It just, you know, got to protect the country. And at his appeals court confirmation in 2006, at the hearing in 2006. Now, keep in mind, Bush tried to get this wormy fucker a federal judgeship. It took him 3 years to do it. Because even the Republicans on the Senate Judiciary Committee knew that this son of a bitch was way to the right of Hitler. So at his confirmation hearing, finally in 2006, to be an appeals court judge, Kavanaugh, who had worked as an associate White House counsel in the Bush administration, Kavanaugh told senators he didn't know anything about the infiltration of the Democrats' file on judicial nomination fights, and he didn't know anything about warrantless wiretapping program before they became public. I didn't know anything about it. You fucking liar! And he can sit there in front of this committee, this guy who has been groomed by the Federalist Society and the Koch brothers and every neo-fascist group in this country, groomed to be an associate Supreme Court justice. So he sits there knowing he's in. No question. I'm home free. Fuck you little Democrats on the committee. You want to ask me questions. I don't give a shit. I know. Ask me about Roe v. Wade. Ask me about guns. I'll say any fucking thing that will satisfy the Trump supporters out here. It won't satisfy you, senators, because you know what kind of a game I'm playing. But I don't have to satisfy you. That's Kavanaugh's attitude. I don't have to satisfy you with a shit. I can talk circles around you. Because I will be the next Supreme Court justice. And there's not a goddamn thing you can do about it, Dick Durbin. Or Dianne Feinstein. So Kavanaugh didn't know shit about those two Bush scandals. There were so goddamn many of them. But Patrick Leahy indicated the documents marked committee confidential show that Manuel Miranda, then a Republican staffer on the Judiciary Committee, had in fact given Kavanaugh emails about Pat Leahy's private concerns back then. Yeah, Leahy was there then, too. About a judicial nominee whose hearing was coming up and a draft letter Leahy had not yet sent. Kavanaugh got it before Leahy even sent the fucking thing. Leahy also suggested that the files may show that this guy, Manuel Miranda, the Republican staffer on this committee, made a reference to having a mole on the committee spying on Democrats. The senator, Leahy, also indicated that Kavanaugh may have some involvement with a memo written by John Yoo, who's an attorney in the Justice Department's Office of Legal Counsel. Remember him? He's the one who wrote these opinions that that gave the Justice Department's blessing on not just the surveillance program, saying it was lawful when it fucking wasn't, but also on the torture of people that we picked up in Afghanistan and Pakistan and wherever the fuck stand and tortured the shit out of them. That was Cheney's deal. Send me the tapes. I want to see the tapes. Send me the video and don't mute the sound. I want to hear these fuckers scream. My old lady likes it too, you know. So Kavanaugh insisted that everything he had testified before when he was getting his appeals court hearing was, quote, 100% accurate. And he also said he wasn't sure what Pat Leahy was referring to. Leahy at that point asked Chuck Grassley to lift the confidentiality protections over the emails in question so that he and Judge Kavanaugh could discuss them in his second round of questioning, which I guess will come up tomorrow. And Grassley indicated, well, I'll look at them. No, he won't. He'll Chuck Grassley, oh, goddamn. Leahy said this, quote, I'm concerned because there is evidence that Mr. Miranda, remember him, he was the Republican staffer for the Senate Judiciary Committee. I'm concerned there's evidence that Mr. Miranda provided you, referring to Kavanaugh, with materials that were stolen from me. And that would contradict your prior testimony. Pat, why don't you just say it? That would make you a fucking liar, Mr. Kavanaugh. Leahy went on, "It is also clear from public emails," and I'm refraining from going into non-public ones, "it's also clear from public emails that you had reason to believe the materials were obtained inappropriately at the time." End quote. Kavanaugh just sat there and stared at the fucking wall. Jesus Christ. And how about Roe v. Wade? What about a woman's right to privacy? Oh, shit. Kavanaugh asserted that, you know, he understands the significance of the issue. Ooh. And he would respect what he called the Supreme Court's precedent on precedent. What the fuck does that mean? Precedent on precedent. Feinstein reminded him of what she called the death tolls in this country among women who tried to end their own pregnancies before Roe v. Wade in 1973. Kavanaugh answered that with, "Well, I don't live in a bubble. I live in the real world. I understand your point of view on that, and I understand how passionate and how deeply people feel about this issue." That's a fucking non-answer. If you look up non-answer in the dictionary, you'll find that statement from Kavanaugh. What the fuck does that mean? "I understand. I feel your pain. I understand your point of view. I know how passionate, how deeply you feel about this." And Feinstein, being Feinstein, did not ask him the one fucking question that she should have. Does Kavanaugh believe Roe v. Wade was correctly decided? She didn't ask him. But even if she had, Kavanaugh had already told Senator Grassley it would not be appropriate to answer that question. "You slimy, shiny, greasy fucker, you. Yeah, you know your Supreme Court judgeship is secure. You know it. You can play these little head games." Feinstein did ask Kavanaugh what he meant when he told Senator Susan Collins that he believed Roe v. Wade was settled law. Settled law. That's what Gorsuch said at his confirmation, and since that son of a bitch has been an associate justice, he has voted 5 times to unsettle settled law. Every Republican is a liar down to the bottoms of his or her feet. And if the person is a Christian Republican, they are malignant liars. Kavanaugh after he said that he believed Roe v. Wade, he said he had told Senator Collins that Roe v. Wade was settled law, and after that he launched into a discourse on the value of precedent, according to New York Times here. Kavanaugh said that Roe v. Wade was, quote, "settled as a precedent of the Supreme Court, and as such deserves respect from judges who took note of it." Huh? And then he noted a subsequent case from 1992, a case of Planned Parenthood versus Casey, which narrowed the scope of Roe v. Wade at the same time that it reaffirmed Roe v. Wade as a precedent. So it's a precedent, but you can fuck with it? Now, that Planned Parenthood versus Casey gave states the authority to regulate abortion so long as those regulations do not pose what the court said would be an undue burden on the woman. And that, Mr. Kavanaugh said, is precedent on precedent. His comments were a reminder that, as Senator Chuck Schumer said, precedents are only settled law until the Supreme Court unsettles them. And, of course, the Democrats on the Senate Judiciary Committee have complained that, and rightly so, I've brought it up, you know it, previous nominees, when they're at their Senate hearings, oh, they pledge to respect precedent. Oh, yeah, oh, yeah. And then when they get confirmed, they narrow or overturn the precedent. And nobody says, you lying fucker, you. You liar! How many Supreme Court justices are sitting right now who have committed perjury before the Senate Judiciary Committee during their confirmation hearings? How many? One, two, three? How about every single fucking Republican that sits on the Supreme Court? Jesus. Let's take a break. When we come back, the next question Pat Leahy asked was, can President Trump pardon himself? I'll be right back. The next question from Patrick Leahy, Democrat of Vermont. And why he asks this question is it may be an indicator that Pat Leahy is starting to deal with some creeping senility. He asked Kavanaugh, can President Trump pardon himself? And Leahy thought he was going to get a direct answer to a direct question, especially that one. Kavanaugh answered this way. The question of self-pardon is something I've never analyzed. I can't begin to answer in this context as a sitting judge and a nominee to the Supreme Court. End quote. I'm sure Kavanaugh wanted to add, go ahead, motherfucker, try again. Try again, you senile old bastard. Ask me again. Leahy never presented the question the way it should have been presented. It shouldn't have been, can Trump pardon himself? I don't think that's the question at all. The question would be, would you as a Supreme Court Associate Justice uphold Trump's right to pardon himself or declare that there's nowhere in the Constitution that allows him to do that? And that shows my idiocy, too, because Kavanaugh would no more answer that than he answered Pat Leahy. But Leahy pressed on. Leahy then asked whether the president could pardon his associates to keep them from testifying against him. Doesn't that have the stench of obstruction to it, huh? Again, smarmy old, hey, fuck you, Leahy, I'll still be a Supreme Court justice when you're dead. Kavanaugh dodged the question. He said that as a judge, he would normally receive briefs and arguments from both sides before coming to a conclusion. Ooh, that's such a judgy way to answer, you lying prick, you. And then he added the Republican mantra, quote, I'm not going to answer hypothetical questions of that sort. Hypothetical questions. But he was pressed on the issue by Senator Feinstein. And Judge Smarmy refused to answer. Refused to say whether, well, he didn't refuse to answer. Oh, that would be so impolite. He refused to say whether he would rule that the Constitution permits a sitting president to be subpoenaed for testimony. He said that as a, quote, matter of judicial independence, end quote, He would not give the senators, quote, a precise answer on a hypothetical that might come before me, end quote. Feinstein's question was, would he rule as a Supreme Court justice that the Constitution permits a sitting president to be subpoenaed for testimony? Yeah, that's a hypothetical question, but the Constitution's not going to come before him. Trump's lawyers might. This guy is slicker than Gorsuch, and I thought Gorsuch, who had this unnerving habit of sitting there during his testimony looking exactly like Casper the Friendly Ghost. He was about the whitest white man I think I've ever seen. You know, with the exception of somebody who is dealing with albinism. But there was Gorsuch sitting there a year ago, answering the same series of questions the same way, except Gorsuch had more of a – his attitude was more like, thought you were going to get a liberal? Excuse me. Whereas Kavanaugh knows that there was no liberal on the horizon. There was no nothing, nobody, nowhere, no how. This was Trump's game. Thanks to Mitch McConnell. And as the Times reports, the potential for a legal fight over a presidential subpoena has become a hot topic amid speculation that Robert Mueller, the special counsel investigating Russia, blah, 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 may issue a subpoena for Trump. Lawyers for the president and the office of the special counsel have been negotiating for months over whether Mr. Trump will voluntarily sit for an interview, so far without success. Well, boys, all you have to do is call up Uncle Mike. I can tell you right now, there is no, let me emphasize, abso-fucking-lutely no way that Trump is going to sit for a spontaneous interview by the special counsel or anyone representing the special counsel. They've already run him through. Who was it? One of Trump's suck-up lawyers who ran him, maybe it was the chief of staff, ran him through a pretend Q&A session with a pretend Robert Mueller. And even in that, in the confines of the White House, with the only people around, Trump supporters, even then he lied, knowing that this was just a mock-up. It was a run-through. It was a, hey, let's see how well you can handle live questions. And the fucker lied then to his own people. Until his lawyer said, okay, that's enough. Stop, 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 stop. This is ridiculous. So now I understand the question is whether or not Trump would submit to written questions. Why not? He won't even see them. If Mueller submits written questions, Trump won't see them. They'll go to his cadre of horses' asses and they'll answer them for him in a manner that just shows Trump's beautiful innocence. But like I heard on MSNBC last night, there really is no reason to speculate about Trump sitting for an interview because A, it's not going to happen. B, it's not going to happen. C, all the way through the fucking alphabet, it's not going to happen. And there's a reason that Mueller is now suggesting, well, okay, let's move on to would you submit to written questions? Is because Mueller doesn't need this cockroach's testimony. He doesn't need Trump's testimony. Madness. Hey, yo, you people voted for Jill Stein. Yay, fucking right, man. Hey, whoa, okay, right? Right? Got to keep that bitch Hillary Clinton out of there, right? Huh? Yeah. According to the New York Times, in 1974, the Supreme Court unanimously ruled in U.S. versus Nixon that a sitting president, in that case, Nixon, could be subpoenaed for documents and records like the Watergate tape recordings. And it wasn't until the tape, if you remember, it wasn't until the tape, the Supreme Court said the tape recordings were to be released. That's when Nixon came on the TV. "My fellow Americans, tomorrow morning I will resign the office of the presidency of the United States." Remember that? Not until those tapes were ordered by the Supreme Court unanimously to be released. Oops. But at the same time, the court that ruled in U.S. versus Nixon, the court has never addressed the question of whether a sitting president could be forced to answer questions. If he cannot be, then a sitting president of the United States is above the law. Now, if you'll remember, during the impeachment of Bill Clinton, the same argument was made by Clinton's lawyers. Well, you know, he's the executive. He's the chief executive. He's the executive branch. He can't be tied up in courts and depositions and hearings and shit because he's got a country to run. And what was the Republican response to that back then? Something along the lines of, "Oh, go fuck yourself. You're going to come in here and testify, and we know that you are a cheese ball, Mr. Elvis Jr., first black president of the United States, sax playing asshole. We know about you, and we know you're going to say some shit, and you're going to commit perjury. And later on, you'll say you're trying to protect the honor of a Southern woman." Shit. And sure enough, true to form, Clinton did exactly that. But the question of whether or not a president could be deposed, could be brought in for questioning, I thought that was already answered. I thought that was a matter of settled law. Well, apparently not, because if it were, then there would be no debate about whether or not Mueller had the constitutional right to subpoena this lying fucker in the White House and ask him questions and let him commit perjury trap or perjury. It's not a perjury trap when the questions are straightforward and the person answering them is a goddamn liar. That's called perjury, not perjury trap, perjury, which is what Trump would do. Now, back to Kavanaugh. He noted that in the U.S. versus Nixon, the Chief Justice at the time was Warren Burger. And it was Warren Burger who wrote the ruling that said, "Turn the fucking tapes over." Burger had been appointed, well, nominated by Nixon and confirmed by the Senate. So Kavanaugh, in his testimony, said he thought the Watergate tapes ruling was, quote, "one of the greatest moments in the Supreme Court's history because it stood up for judicial independence in the face of political pressure." But how that precedent would, in Kavanaugh's words, apply to other hypotheticals, like, oh, let me think of one. I know, whether a subpoena for presidential testimony in a criminal investigation, like the one going on right now, should be upheld. Well, that was something. Well, that's a hypothetical. I can't answer that. Now, remember also that Kavanaugh was a prosecutor working for Ken Starr when Ken Starr issued the subpoena to Clinton. And according to New York Times, Clinton's legal team negotiated a deal whereby he, Clinton, testified voluntarily before a grand jury, not under subpoena. And Mr. Starr then withdrew the subpoena. So the issue of whether or not a sitting president, can be subpoenaed was never adjudicated. Clinton went in on his own to commit perjury. And years later then, Mr. Kavanaugh, after working in the Bush administration after the September 11 attacks, Kavanaugh said that he thought presidents should be temporarily shielded from criminal investigation while they're in office. But that's not what you said when it was a Democratic president, you slimy, smiley, smarmy bastard, you. Let's take a break. We'll have a little bit more on this when we come back. And next hour, I want to get into Kaepernick and some other. I keep wanting to call him Copernicus and some other issues. Stick around. I'll be right back. Oh, and we're coming up on a break here pretty quick, but the one thing yesterday, the Grassley, I thought I was going to throw up fingernail clippings. When Grassley asked, the very first question was, that was today. That's right, that was today. Very first question from Grassley was, would he be an independent Supreme Court Justice? And Kavanaugh, of course, he said, yeah, what's he going to say, Charles? What's he going to say? No, I'm going to be dependent wholly on what the fascist right in this country tells me to do. Yeah, okay. Anyway, Kavanaugh cited three Supreme Court landmark decisions to make his case. I don't get this, but two are predictable. Brown versus Board of Education and Youngstown Sheet and Tube Company versus Sawyer. That occurred in 1952. It was a decision rejecting then-President Harry Truman's attempt to seize the nation's steel mills to aid the war effort in Korea. And the third was U.S. versus Nixon, when the Supreme Court unanimously ruled that Nixon had to comply with a subpoena seeking tapes of his conversations in the Oval Office. I hate these liars. I hate people who are so good at lying. Trump's not good at lying. Trump is just a bald-faced liar. He'd stumble over his own dick if he didn't zip up his fly. Well, okay, that's an exaggeration, but you know what I'm saying. Trump is not a good liar. Kavanaugh is an expert liar. All right, we're going to take a break. I'll be back momentarily. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. All right. Oh, by the way, I wanted to mention once again about our planned gathering in the North Georgia Mountains. We're hoping it's going to be a book signing launch or book launch party, whatever. And we need your input. What we need you to do, and by the way, this is not a commitment to attend. I mean, either you'll be able to make it or you won't. But this is a survey to select what would be the best time in November and the best venue to stay in. What I'm asking you to do is go to MikeMalloy.com, vote for your preferred date and the type of lodging that you would like if you were to come. It's we don't even know the date yet, but it'll help us if we know what date you could make it and what sort of lodging you would like. And if you didn't order a book, don't worry. You can pre-order your copy today at MikeMalloy.com. And for a limited time, I will sign it to you. You know, whatever, if your name is Mary Smith. Nobody's name Mary Smith, I know. If your name is Mary Smith, I'll say to Mary Smith, Mike Malloy, whatever. And please do that. I'm still working on the book. I'm not done yet. I still have maybe a chapter and a half, maybe two. I'm not like Bob Woodward. You know, he can turn these things out because that's all he's done his entire life. This is my first book, so it's not quite finished. But I think you're going to like it. And I've written it. Somebody asked me the other day, a friend of mine in New York who's doing some copy editing for me, we were talking about it, and she said, well, how would you describe what you've written? She hadn't read it yet. She just got it. I said, well, I wrote it in a very cinematography cinematographic, whatever. I read it. Never mind. I wrote it so it'd be easily transferable to film. That's all. Good friend of mine here in Atlanta who has since passed away, went to the great writer's conclave in the sky, a guy named Bill Deal, who wrote Sharkey's Machine and a couple other books. And 35 years ago, was it 30? God, that long ago. When he was writing Sharkey's Machine, he actually, it was about 40 years ago. He said to me, if the time ever comes when you write a book, because he knew I was interested in writing, but I never did till now. He said, write it in a way that it's easily transferable to film. And this is 40 years ago, before internet and all this stuff. He said, because it's very difficult for people to find time to read nowadays, but they will go to see a film. So I don't know what that means, but it means, I mean, my telling you that, but it just means that the book is written, the one I wrote, in a way that is easy to visualize. As promised, Kaepernick, the former NFL quarterback for San Francisco 49ers, you know what happened to him. Because he took a stand, so to speak, for an end to police brutality to black men, young black men out on the street, violence against black men by law enforcement. And let's not beat around the bush here. You know what I'm talking about. You know what has happened in this country in the past 6-7 years. All right. What has happened in this country in the past 200 or 300 years? But we're talking about the past 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years. The shooting down of people in the street or choking them to death because they're selling single cigarettes or, it's just fucking insane. And the terrible part of this, the terrible part of it, first of all, is the deaths of these young men and in a couple instances, young women, black men, black women, that in and of itself is bad enough. The families that are left behind, whether it's the mom and dad or kids or the fiance or a wife or children, you know, whatever, that pain will ripple out for a very long time. But a secondary aspect of this is the fact that, you know, white people better understand something. This shit can't continue. I don't know how else to put it. You know, I've talked on programs and podcasts and shit that I've had for the past 35 years that if the long arc of history does bend towards justice, as Dr. King said, then white people ought to be real goddamn frightened right now about what might be. I'm not saying for sure, but what might be waiting in the not-too-distant future. For real. A lot of people who have been hideously victimized by the white race have this amazing capacity, I've noticed, of forgiveness, even when it's not warranted, if forgiveness requires being sought, which it probably doesn't. But I've watched this time and time and time and time again. There's a limit, I would think, to forgiveness. There has to be. There's a limit, it seems to me, to everything. I don't care what it is. But I digress. Nike is the one who decided to do this. As the as is being reported, you know, Nike has this history of being controversial in their marketing to young people in this country, black and white. The company had Charles Barkley declare that he was not a role model. You know, don't be like me. Tiger Woods reminded people that some country clubs turned away people like Tiger Woods because of his skin color. So this week, Nike returned to that tradition. And honestly, as this article points out, when's the last time there was any discussion in media and outrage and all sorts of shit with the name Nike involved? It's been a pretty long time. Anyway, Nike went back to that tradition this week, and they revealed that Colin Kaepernick is the face of a new major new marketing campaign honoring the 30th anniversary of their slogan, the iconic "Just Do It." Now, that may have been around your entire life. I remember when that first came out. Oh God, you know, just do what? Just do it. Yeah, we got all gamey with it. Just do it. Yeah, come on, baby, just do it. You know, that kind of shit, which is not what they meant. But anyway, what Nike has done now, it may be their most controversial move. Nike signed Colin Kaepernick to a lucrative new contract and will produce branded apparel with his name and image. And in this piece, and I think it's from the Times, I think. But there's a phrase in here that is irritating to me, as there always is. You ever notice that? If you're a regular listener to this program, this podcast, you ever notice? I always come up with something, well, this really irritates the shit out of me, in an otherwise interesting announcement or article. Here it is. Nike has assigned Mr. Kaepernick, comma, perhaps the most divisive American athlete of his generation, comma, to a new lucrative contract. I don't think Colin Kaepernick is the one who has been divisive. How is making a humble statement about the mistreatment of your tribe, your group? Remember the two black athletes, who was the other one? At the 68 Olympics in Mexico City with a closed fist. And then they were banned from sports. What the fuck? I mean, where it concerns professional football, if you still watch it, and I tend not to anymore, it's pretty formulaic. It's designed to resemble warfare. I don't know. College football, sure. Although that's starting to be corrupted too, isn't it? But if they can say that Colin Kaepernick is perhaps the most divisive American athlete of his generation, you know, that really turns my stomach. First of all, why say that? What the fuck's the point? He made a statement that had not a goddamn thing to do with the goddamn flag, not a goddamn thing to do with the goddamn sport of professional football, and everything to do with his personal feelings about a national anthem written by a racist, the second verse of which gets right fucking into the racism. Jesus Christ, what is wrong with white folk? What is wrong with white people? Why do you lose your shit over something like this? Why not figure out what he is protesting? He is protesting the gratuitous slaughter of young black men. I don't give a shit if they did steal a candy bar. I don't give a shit if their pockets are full of cheap jewelry made in China that they might have stolen out of it. That's no fucking reason to shoot them dead. So when Nike identifies him as perhaps the most, or not Nike, but whoever wrote this article, as perhaps the most divisive American athlete of his generation, you know, immediately my brain springboards away from Kaepernick, away from the Nike ad campaign that is planned, and springs to the owners of football teams, professional football teams. They're like white slavers. They buy and sell people. Okay, they pay them what appears to be, to people like you and me, an awful lot of money. But when your fucking brain has been battered to the point where at 52 years old, you can't even spoon feed yourself anymore. Oh, you put on a good show every Sunday and Monday and Wednesday and Thursday for the folks sitting on their large asses at home. And if you're a professional ball player, you gave the owner who sits about 100 fucking feet above the field in an air-conditioned, glassed-in thing with his honeys and his wives and his dipshit family sitting around. You've given them the chance to go, yeah, yeah, yeah. But they're still slavers. That's my opinion. I know there's probably a lot of professional football players that say, shut the fuck up, Malloy. You know, what? What are you talking about? I'm talking about what I always talk about, just my impression. But to me, the owners of these professional football teams, and it goes beyond that, but we're talking about professional football teams now, they buy and sell, for the most part, black men. Buy them and sell them. Yo, boy, come here. Let me see you throw this ball. How'd you like to make, $17 million for the next 3 years? Now, you have to agree to give up your brain and maybe your ability to walk, maybe your ability to speak clearly. What the fuck? Money's money, right? And the other thing, too, about Colin Kaepernick that just I admire a lot. He hasn't said a fucking word. The orange asshole in the White House went absolutely apeshit, as he is inclined to do about everything. Anything he can get his grubby little short stubby fingers into, he will. And Kaepernick hasn't said a fucking word. He controls the entire NFL protest without saying a word. Making these white folks jump around like drops of water on a hot pancake griddle. You know what I'm saying? Just going fucking crazy. Kaepernick? Now, he has filed a lawsuit against the NFL for, here's the word you'll love, collusion. Because last year, none, not one of the owners of these professional football teams were interested in buying him. Consequently, he wasn't able to play. Now, is that because he's a bad football player? Fuck no! He's starting quarterback at the San Francisco 49ers, wasn't he? But see, in 2016, Colin Kaepernick decided to kneel. Kneel. Now, half the time, these Christian white motherfuckers will beat your ass to get you to kneel. Kneel down, motherfucker! But when he does it, oh, what are you doing for the wrong reason, brother? Get up. Kneel, get up. The fuck you want me to do? Kneel, get. But he got on his knee to protest police brutality, the murder of young black men, social injustice, and then a handful of other players followed suit, whatever. You know what I mean? Kneeling and or locking their arm, you know, their elbows, locking them together, or raising a fist, like. Will you look it up for me, please? Carlos was his last name. The two black athletes at the 68 Olympics. I hate this when I can't think. Well, I can think, but what I can't recall. And then it was Trump that turned it into a political fight with his childish fucking degenerate tweets that he put out there to stimulate his Nazi Klan followers. What are the names? Tommy Smith and John Carlos. Thank you. I can't remember Tommy Smith. Jesus. Tommy Smith and John Carlos, who way back in 1968. Now, if you'll remember 1968, it was a pretty awful year, right? Dr. King was assassinated. Bobby Kennedy was assassinated. Chicago erupted over the Democratic National Convention. Just about every major city in America erupted. It looked like this whole fucking country was going to burn down. You weren't here in 68, were you? I was. I remember it very clearly. It was fucking horrible. It was an emotional explosion that was triggered by the assassination of Dr. King. And I remember thinking, we are going to wind up. We're going to wind up as two separate countries. White folk over here and not white folk over there. It's fucking horrible. John Carlos and Tommy Smith, and it was 68 Olympics. Now, already, there is an effort on the internets to fight back. You know, you're not supposed to be a corporation and honor somebody. You're not supposed to be anybody and honor somebody else who made a stand for social justice or just to stop the murder of black people. You know, that's for the cops to handle. You and I, we're supposed to sit down, shut up. So now already some of these Yahoo redneck dumb fucks are out there making little videos of where they're burning their Nikes. Well, you stupid shits. If you want to burn your, what'd you pay for them? $100, $150, $180? Burn them, motherfucker. Be stupid. Go ahead. You're already a racist. Be a stupid racist. And somebody else cutting the Nike logo off the, you know, let me just be very clear. I think anybody that buys sneakers because of the brand name is, you know, a few ounces short of a pound to begin with. But that's the whole country. I mean, we are brand insane in this country. I mean, look at this orange orangutan that we have in the Oval Office. Talk about somebody who's brand insane. Get my name up there, Trump. He wants to name the White House the Trump House. Probably will try. But the rednecks are out there, and they're not just here in the South. They're out there all over the place burning their fucking shoes. You idiots. You goddamn fools. You jackoffs. You jerkoffs. What is wrong with you? What do you care? You're a racist. You demonstrate it by burning your shoes, you dumb shit. You're a racist anyway. So if Colin Kaepernick wants to go off and do his Negro thing, what the fuck do you care? You're going to burn your shoes. Oh, way to respond. Way to respond. Sometimes I wish I could erase this white shit that's all over me. Not really, but you know what I'm saying. I'd hate to give up white privilege. Whew. The piece here says Nike's strategy risks alienating countless consumers who believe the national anthem protests that Mr. Kaepernick began are disrespectful. You stupid fuckers. You stupid fuckers. Do you think shooting black men down in the street is disrespectful? It has nothing to do with the goddamn flag. It has to do with the goddamn song, which celebrates racism, which leads white cops to shoot black men in the fucking street and kill them. Is there something about being Caucasian that guarantees ignorance? Jesus Christ! Is this what we've used our white privilege for? To become dumb as shit? Where concerns these simple issues? Don't fucking shoot people in the street! That's controversial? You know, the cops have all kinds of fucking weapons. They got tasers and lasers and bazers and snazers and nets and shit and, I mean, all kinds of stuff. Why the first thing you use is a fucking 9mm Glock? Shares of Nike on the New York Stock Exchange yesterday were down $2.60, about 3%. Stock price drop. Huh? Capitalism speaks. It'll come back up. This kind of shit happens whenever there is some kind of a move towards social justice that involves some, quote, misguided, end quote, corporation who might be trying to redeem itself by doing some little thing to say, okay, we want to sell shoes. That's what we want to do. But goddammit, it's not right what happened to Colin Kaepernick. So we're going to put him in an ad. We're going to pay him a lot of money. Fuck the NFL. If they're not going to hire him, we will. We're all about sports shoes. And then it says this decision by Nike will undoubtedly have ramifications for the NFL, which is caught in the middle of the debate. The league is a major partner of Nike's, but is also being sued by Mr. Kaepernick, who has accused the league's 32 teams of colluding not to give him a contract because of his on-field demonstrations. Do you believe that? Do you believe that there is willful, knowable collusion among the 32 professional NFL teams to keep Colin Kaepernick off the field? I do. I believe that's as fucking true as saying Donald Trump is an ignorant savage. However, what Nike is doing, it could pay off among the younger people, the whites and blacks, and Latinos and Asians, the young people who look at this racist shit of people in my generation and the one right behind me and the one right behind that as a bunch of horse shit. Just pure garbage. So for those kids, Generation Z, the millennials, Gen X, whatever, maybe they'll look at this and they'll go, yeah, that's cool. That's cool. I think I'll go buy me some Nikes. Yeah, here it is. Nearly two-thirds of individuals who wear Nikes in the United States are under 35 years of age and are much more racially diverse than the baby boomer population. Well, you know, that's according to a sports industry analyst. Here's the thing about the baby boom generation. First of all, I'm not a baby boomer. I'm too old. I'm what's considered a war baby. I was born during World War II. Baby boomers are the generation born from 46 to 66, I think. Big, you know, all these the survivors of the war came back and everybody wanted to have sex and everybody wanted to have babies and, you know, buy their little houses and their little ticky-tacky and get on with the American dream. And consequently, there was a 72 million, I think there's 72 million people who wound up in that cohort, the so-called baby boom generation. So anytime the baby boom generation is criticized, you know, I feel privileged. I can sit back and say, yeah, you dirty fuckers, because that's not me. Oh, God. Everything is crazy. Everything is crazy. It's just... It's just down the rabbit hole. Anyway, this guy from the sports industry group, it's called the NPD group, he says, quote, I think Nike went into this absolutely knowing what they were doing with the intention that some people would be offended. But the people buying their products, whether they are millennials or Gen Z consumer, These consumers want their brands to take visible social positions, and this is an opportunity for Nike to do just that. And then they got a survey. A recent survey from Morning Consult, another marketing group, echoes what the sports analyst said. Urban and young consumers were more likely to say they would react favorably to a company that advocated the right of protesters to kneel during the national anthem. Indeed, on social media, where the nation's young people live and breathe, and some die. On social media, Mr. Kaepernick attracted more than a million responses on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter in the hour after he announced the Nike partnership, according to a social media analytics company, Listen First. On Twitter, more than 100,000 posts in the first 24 hours included the hashtag Boycott Nike. Yeah, of course. You stupid. These are some of the Caucasians that say, hey, we're going to stand for this shit. But the firm's analysis, Nike's analysis, showed that, quote, more support for Nike and Kaepernick than we see negative actions taken against them. And the other thing, thanks to the white idiotics, the white dumb fucks, the white, mostly males, who have their heads planted firmly up their asses, what they generated was at least $43 million in free advertising for Nike, according to one estimate. So I'm sure Nike is just sitting back, the executives are sitting back going, yeah, you dumb racist white sons of bitches, keep going! Keep it going! Now, the timing of the partnership between Nike and Kaepernick was a surprise. The NFL was caught off guard. And Nike has virtually ignored him for ever since the so-called controversy arose. Nike has not stayed completely away from Colin Kaepernick until this. The NFL did not address the campaign yesterday or Monday, but they did say this. They released a statement yesterday. NFL did. It said, quote, the social justice issues that Colin and other professional athletes have raised deserve our attention and action, end quote. Well, good on you, you fucking slavers. Good on you. Even slavers once in a while can you know, say something that is partly righteous. Now, they're probably saying it to avoid disruption within their slave colonies. Remember, they have 32 slave colonies, 32 NFL franchises. So the smart way for the slavers to respond to this is to come up with something. Yeah, well, you know, we really do think that social justice issues deserve some action and attention. Now, how's everything down in the quarters? You boys quiet? Everything quiet down there? Okay. Jesus Christ. Woo! So there you have it. There you have it. That's all I've got from the wonderful world of sports. Hey, Kathy, can we have a break here momentarily? Burning their sneakers. See, I have to say this. Only white people would come up with that idea. Only white people. You know why? Because they have more than one pair of sneakers. That's why. We'll be right back. All right, so we have the third book. It's almost like a series. There have been more, but about this crazy son of a bitch. But the latest one by Bob Woodward, Fear, Trump in the White House. This follows Fire and Fury by Michael Wolff and Unhinged by Omarosa Newman. And the common thread among all three books, although they're certainly written in different styles, but the common thread among all three books is that the Trump White House is chaos to the point where there is no leadership there. Nothing is going on other than they're trying to constrain this crazy fucker. But the new book portrays, through the words of people who've been working for this psycho, portray Trump as unstable and uninformed. Jesus Christ. Now, the book has not come out until next Tuesday, and it's already number one on the Amazon bestseller list, yada, 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 yada. Yesterday, after copies of the book were handed to reporters or leaked to reporters, Trump got on the electric TV on the Daily Caller on Fox. That's the one hosted by that crazy little bastard. What's his name, Kathy? Do you know who I mean? Huh? Tucker Carlson, yeah. Yeah, Daily Caller. Isn't that Tucker Carlson's? I know Tucker Carlson has, whatever. I know he was the one that started it. It doesn't matter. It's just another shithole of lies and deceptions. But anyway, Trump told the Daily Caller that parts of Woodward's book were made up. Of course they were. They were made up. They just, because Bob Woodward just thought, I think I'll make shit up and put it in my book. Trump said of Bob Woodward, quote, "It's just another bad book. He's had a lot of credibility problems." You know, Trump saying that anybody has credibility problems or problems with honesty or problems with sanity, just crack my ass up. I mean, just make me laugh so fucking hard. I think my knees are going to break. I mean, Trump saying that Bob Woodward has had credibility problems. Yeah. Crazy Town is where they all say they work. They work at Crazy Town, the ones that work or have worked for Trump. And good old Miss Trunchbull, the daughter of a Baptist minister and former governor of Arkansas, good old Miss Trunchbull, who is got to be the sourest person I think I've ever seen in the position that she holds as White House press secretary, and the biggest liar, and I mean that both ways. I thought Ari Fleischer was bad, which he was. You know, just a lying son of a bitch. Kathy put together a tape one time. You've heard it. Lies, tell me lies, tell me sweet little lies. You know, the Fleetwood Mac song. And it was just, in their own words, all these fucking liars from the Bush administration. And among them, Ari Fleischer was the biggest. But nobody comes close to Miss Trunchbull, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, the preacher's daughter, the good Christian. She called the book, quote, "nothing more than fabricated stories." Miss Trunchbull, you're a fabricated press officer. You really are. You really are. All right, here's some takeaways from the book. The first one is obvious. The Russian investigation is a constant source of anxiety for Trump. And not because he knows he's a fucking criminal. Oh, that's Trump has been a criminal since he was in kindergarten. That doesn't bother him at all. The part that causes him anxiety is he can't fucking control it. That's all. Every criminal enterprise he's been involved in, which is just about every enterprise he's ever been involved in, were enterprises he could control. He would use the courts. He would use the legal system. He would use his gunsels. He would use his hitmen. He'd use his fixers. But he controlled it. Until this. So, of course, a lot of anxiety. Here's what it says. In late January, Mr. Woodward wrote, Trump sat down with John Dowd, then an outside lawyer advising the president on the White House's interactions with Robert Mueller, special counsel. The idea was to stage a mock interview between the president and Mr. Mueller, who was trying to question Trump, still is. During the session, Trump repeatedly lied and contradicted himself. It was a practice session. It was his lawyer. It was just a rehearsal, and the fucker couldn't tell the truth then. Trump lied and contradicted himself, insulted former FBI Director James Comey, then exploded in anger, ranting for half an hour about the investigation being a hoax. So November 2016, you fixed him, you showed him, you went into the voting booth and you voted for Jill Stein to keep that bitch Hillary away from the presidency. Nice going. Anyway, the attorney, Dowd, John Dowd, tried to demonstrate why their meeting between Trump and Dowd was sufficient reason for Trump not to do an interview with Mueller. And, of course, what Dowd said to the special prosecutor or special counsel was, well, he's a busy man. Trump? You know, he probably wakes up in the morning, flips on Fox, sits there with his cheeseburger breakfast, cheeseburger chaser. Then he gets up, farts, wheezes, takes a dump, gets dressed, has two or three hairstylists come in and arrange his fucking head. You know, that's his busy schedule. And then he goes and plays golf. Yeah, that's his executive time. According to Woodward, John Dowd, who at the time was not officially a White House or presidential attorney, who was just offering advice, Dowd told Trump after the interview, quote, "It's not that you're lying or you're bad or anything like that. Given your daily intake, just look what we've done this afternoon." That doesn't make a lot of sense. I guess it's out of context. And then Dowd handed him a letter addressed to Mueller, asserting the president's right to terminate the investigation. Trump loved it. Now, what Dowd was doing was just trying to calm this erratic monster down. You know, when you create Frankenstein monster, you got to be fucking careful, because if the goddamn thing gets loose on the countryside, it's going to be eating sheep and setting places on fire and shit. So that's what Dowd was trying to do. Here, look at this. The day after, a gleeful Mr. Trump called Dowd and said, "I slept like a rock. I fucking love that letter." Now, that was in January. Woodward says that by March, very little progress had been made with Mr. Mueller. On March 5th, Dowd met with Mueller and one of his deputies and explained why he was trying to keep Trump away from the special counsel. Dowd said, quote, "I'm not going to sit there and let him look like an idiot," end quote. Later that month, Dowd told Trump why he, Trump, should not sit for an interview with Mueller. Dowd said, quote, "It's either that or an orange jumpsuit." Ooh. Now, as you know, And Woodward gets into this a bit, Mueller has engaged in conversations for months with Trump's various array of lawyers and fixers and handlers and gunzels and assholes. And by the way, where's Rudy Giuliani? I haven't heard from him for the past 36 hours. Is he dead? The book offers, according to New York Times, the book offers the first extensive look at dialogue between Mueller and those involved in the Russia investigation. Only Woodward could get this, you know, this close to Mueller and this investigation. Woodward recounted Mr. Dowd's zigzagging relationship with Mueller's office and the lengths that Dowd went to build rapport with Mueller in the heat of negotiations over an interview with Trump. Dowd fluctuated between credulity and outrage, at one point telling Trump, after an especially trying meeting with Mr. Mueller, that the president may have been right about the special counsel all along. I feel sorry for Dowd. Woodward wrote that Mr. Dowd would tell Mueller that the president did not have time for the inquiry while he was juggling the responsibilities of his new job. Mueller reportedly responded to that by saying, "I'm very sensitive to that. I'm doing the best I can." Still, at one point, Mueller told Dowd that he could acquire a grand jury subpoena, which Dowd interpreted as a threat. What else would it be? Can of sardines? Of course it's a threat. Mueller reportedly, though, told Dowd, "I'm not trying to threaten you. I'm just thinking of the possibilities here. I'm not trying to threaten you." Notice the carefully worded declaration there. "I'm not trying to threaten you. I am threatening you, asshole." I mean, that's how I read it. "I'm not trying to threaten you. I'm succeeding at threatening you." In one meeting with Mueller, Mr. Dowd, to make plain just how much he feared that Trump would commit perjury, Dowd asked Jay Sekulow, that Christian freak, Sekulow, former Jew who now thinks he's a Christian. He worked for Jerry Falwell. And was it Falwell? Yeah, Falwell. And set up a counterpoint to the ACLU. I think they call it the American something, legal something union. It's a sham and a mix and a myth and a hoax. It's bullshit. But Sekulow really pisses me off. He left Judaism to become a fucked up Christian. I guess the money was better working for the other side. Anyway, Sekulow, another one of Trump's lawyers, In one meeting with Mr. Mueller, Mr. Dowd, to make plain just how much he feared that Mueller, that Trump, I'm sorry, would commit perjury, Dowd asked Jay Sekulow to reenact Mr. Trump's practice session from January. So Sekulow, playing Trump, imitated an answer to a question about James Comey. Woodward wrote this, quote, "Sekulow's answer was classic Trump, an answer spun out of thin air with contradictions, made-up stuff, anger, a perfect performance, a perfect Trump," end quote. The book also explains, or at least lays out, Trump's total lack of interest, to the point that his advisors reportedly are stunned by his lack of interest in or knowledge of major issues. Why are they stunned? This is a dumb shit fucking man. I mean, all you had to have done was listen, if you weren't listening during the campaign to his ridiculous shit, or those so-called debates when they have 15 or 20 Republicans standing there like department store mannequins and Trump, you know, if you weren't listening to that, all you had to do was listen to his inauguration speech to understand that the man is out of his fucking mind. He really is. I mean, he's not homicidal, but he could be. His lack of knowledge on major issues. Trump's advisors are repeatedly stunned by that. Woodward used several defense-related meetings to illustrate Trump's problem grasping his own administration's policies, including a July 2017 gathering at the Pentagon between Trump, military brass, and members of the cabinet. Okay, they all get together this last July a year ago. Trump was bitching and moaning to those around him, and they tried to clarify the purpose of the war in Afghanistan. Trump said, "When are we going to start winning some wars? We got these charts. When are we going to win some wars? Why are you jamming this down my throat? I think this was a meeting where Trump said, why aren't you out killing people? Kill them. Kill them all. Sound like Colonel Kurtz in Apocalypse Now. Kill them all. Trump attacked the generals and cabinet members in the room, which left Secretary of State Rex Tillerson at the time exasperated. Tillerson said once Trump had left, he's a fucking moron. That's the famous, he's a fucking moron. If you remember, Tillerson never specifically denied he said that. At a January meeting of the National Security Council, January this year, Trump asked why the United States was spending so much on the Korean Peninsula. Jim Mattis, defense secretary, replied that the administration was trying to prevent World War III. After Trump left the room, Mattis told people that Trump understood the topic, quote, like a fifth or sixth grader. And that's pushing it up a bit. In another episode, Gary Cohn, the former chief economic advisor to Trump, who resigned, said, I'm out of here before I lose my fucking mind. Gary Cohn took or stole a letter from Trump's desk that Trump had planned to sign, withdrawing the United States from a trade deal with South Korea. Bob Woodward wrote that Gary Cohn told a colleague that he had to, quote, protect the country, end quote. Trump apparently never realized the letter had disappeared. In his interview with the Daily Caller, Trump denied that Cohn had taken the letter. Trump said, there's nobody taking anything from me. Woodward also prints a summary of a July 2017 meeting written by a senior White House official who spoke with the attendees. Quote, it seems clear that many of the president's senior advisors, especially those in the national security team, are extremely concerned with his erratic nature, his relative ignorance, his inability to learn, as well as what they consider his dangerous views. It goes on and on. I can't wait till that comes out. Oh, my God. The Washington Post published audio, it's online if you want to hear it, of an 11-minute call between Woodward and Trump, in which Woodward warned the president that his book would be severe, and Woodward expressed regret that he never had a chance to get Trump's view of his own job. Trump sounded incredulous that he never got to sit for an interview and defend himself to the author. What? I didn't know. Nobody. Woodward told him that he made the request to at least a half dozen people close to the president and that it was never granted. On the call, Trump sounded worried, repeating his refrain that it would be a bad book and that Mr. Woodward did not understand just how successful Trump had been in office. Trump said, quote, so we're going to have a very inaccurate book, and that's too bad. Woodward, it's going to be accurate, I promise. Trump, yeah, okay. Well, accurate is that nobody's ever done a better job than I'm doing as president. That's accurate. John Kelly, chief of staff, who has long been rumored to be close to resigning, once called Trump a fucking idiot and said the White House staff was operating in crazy town, according to the book. Kelly said at a meeting, quote, it's pointless to try to convince him of anything. He's gone off the rails, end quote. Now, when Gary Cohn tried to resign over the comments that Trump made after that Nazi march in Charlottesville in August last year, Trump belittled Gary Cohn but persuaded him to stay. Mr. Kelly then pulled Mr. Cohn aside to express his dismay over how Mr. Cohn was treated. Kelly said, quote, that was the greatest show of self-control I've ever seen. If that was me, I would have taken that resignation letter and shoved it up his ass six different times. Woo! Woo! And yesterday, General Kelly denied in a statement that he had ever called Mr. Trump an idiot. What's the matter with these? Well, I guess what's the matter with these military guys, they are so eaten up with chain of command, they still believe that Trump is commander-in-chief and their immediate superior, and therefore they have to lie with him and for him. I'll see you next time. In the meantime, take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.